And it's funny what you're saying about exposition, because I felt that there is quite a bit of exposition in the first, let's say, like 40 minutes, and then Nolan just gives up on that and just throws you in a deep end, like, right, lads, crack on, you know, you'll be fine.
Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the Dan and Joe Film Show. Hope you're all well. Hope you're staying safe. God bless you all. As always, I'm joined by the guy who puts the in Inception. He puts the done in Kirk. Please welcome. It's my good pal, Joe Richards. Hello, Joey.
How long have you been preparing that one for? How long?
2 days.
2 days. Were you thinking of that while we were watching Tenet the other day? Were you thinking, like, what you're going to say on this show?
Literally, I think I was conscious for about half an hour of that film, and the rest 2 hours I was thinking, right, good Nolan puns.
So that's why you looked so confused, because I kept looking over at you and you looked really, really confused. So now it all makes sense. It wasn't the film, it was what you were going to introduce the show as.
Yeah, my expression was kind of... Yeah, nobody, obviously we're doing a podcast, nobody can actually see that, but that's all I was doing. So hope you enjoyed it at home, everybody. You know, we are professionals over here. But how have you been? Obviously, a very special show today. We're talking about the big film Tenet, which is, fingers crossed, will save cinema, or at least give it a fighting chance, I always say. But how have you been in yourself? Obviously, restrictions are easing and kind of everyone's getting back to normal, trying to get back to normal life at the minute.
Yeah, to be honest, everything feels sort of normal now. Obviously, we've been to the cinema a couple of times, and I think that's the main thing I missed with the whole lockdown. Obviously, I miss my, you know, the family and stuff like that as well. But cinema was like a close second, I guess. But, you know, I'm seeing the family socially distanced in parks and stuff. So I saw the niece and the nephews a couple of days ago, which was really, really nice. And yeah, like, the cinema is the big thing for me, you know, being back there kind of on a weekly basis and seeing a couple of new releases. It does feel like normality is back now to a degree. Obviously, we still got to be safe and we're following the procedures as you know, the government says, wearing masks into the cinema and out the cinema or whatever. It feels good. I'm still working from home. So that's still really fun, because I can, you know, wear my pajamas until 4:30 in the afternoon if I want. I'm not wearing them now, I will say that. But
I should hope so.
But we've had a bit of a break. You went to Cornwall. Tell our listeners how your break was.
It was great. I mean, I love Cornwall. I love the beach. I love the seaside. I love getting my toes wet in the sand. And it was great. St. Ives was beautiful. And it was very, very packed. There were lots of people there. And it is hard wearing a mask in like 30 degree heat. It's that was something I didn't really like. I was sweating, my face and everywhere. And so, yeah, it was really, really nice. I think you do need a break, don't you? I totally understand why people are going away. Obviously, maybe not abroad right now, because there's a lot of restrictions with that. But obviously in the UK, I know a lot of families are staying in the UK and going to places like Cornwall. And who blames them? I mean, I had a lovely time. It's always nice to go away. I know you're going away later on in the year, but it's always good to go away. Yeah, I had a great time.
You didn't get to go to the Pole Dark Museum.
Well, you know, Demelza would not be happy with me. No, we were planning on going to the Pole Dark Museum because my other half, Amelia, she loves Pole Dark. We went with her parents. They love Pole Dark. Yeah, it was meant to be. Maybe next time we'll get them. But yeah, the Pole Dark Museum is really small and cramped, which is why I think they didn't open it. But all the Pole Dark women out there and all the fans of the show, I mean, they were so upset. They had all their flocks on and all their dresses up and waiting outside. And they were like, sorry, guys, not today. it was good. It was good.
Good, I'm glad.
Yeah. If you haven't noticed, I've got some lovely sound quality here. I bought a microphone. It's not as big as grand as Joe's, but, you know, it never is.
You really couldn't resist that pun, could you? Couldn't resist
no,
it.
No, couldn't. Really special show today. We're really, really excited to welcome, as a co-host for the entire show, we're going to talk about news, we can talk about reviews, and we're going to talk especially about a little film called Tenet. I don't know whether you heard about it. It's a really low-budget indie film. And joining us now, she's the head of the podcast Nolan Me, Nolan You, which I think is the best title of any podcast I've ever seen. Please welcome to the show, Emily Murray. Hello, Emily.
Hello, how are you both today?
Yeah,
do really well.
We've been listening now for quite some time to Nolan Me, Nolan You. And I remember, I think I saw the kind of first tweet of like Nolan Me, Nolan You, and everybody just going, that has got to be the best name for a podcast ever created. So yeah, we've been big followers of you since then. So it's really nice to have you on the show. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I must say, I always have to say this, that is, I didn't think of the name. It was my boyfriend. So we have to give our hats off to Tom for the genius name.
Does he get a cut of the earnings from and you then? Is it 50-50 because he came up with the name?
He gets all the glory.
So great to have you, because obviously we are discussing the big film Tenet, and obviously your podcast is kind of about Christopher Nolan, about his filmography, and obviously to express your fandom and how much you love his films. How has it been the weeks leading up to Tenet? Because obviously you must be like a child at Christmas, just eagerly awaiting the film. How's it been for you?
It's been great. The reason I started the podcast was because my love of cinema started with The Dark Knight. Went to go see it when I was 13. It just like completely changed my life. So I was just bored during lockdown, so I thought, Tenet's coming out soon, and I really like Christopher Nolan. Why don't I just do a podcast about him? And it's been really, you know, great seeing the interaction and people enjoying it, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's been nice, I suppose. The podcast has been tracking all his movies, so it's been nice revisiting them all as well. I've been talking about them ahead of Tenet. Yeah, it's just been such good fun, and kind of it's going to be more ending soon, because now Tenet's come out, which I think will be quite sad to say goodbye, but I'm sure it'll come back with strength at some point. But yeah, Tenet's been, yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks for sure. Very exciting couple of weeks. And I was lucky enough to go to the press screening as well at BFI IMAX, which is like a career goal to go to a Nolan press screening. Madness. But that was fantastic. I've never been to the BFI IMAX too, and it was just wonderful.
Wow, yeah, great, great accomplishment, especially if The Dark Knight was, you say, is the film which kind of got you into cinema. I must have felt like you've kind of come full circle.
Yeah, it did.
In that moment, for sure.
It's been great, to be honest.
And again, yeah, thank you so much for joining us. It's going to be such a good show. We're going to obviously be reviewing Tenet later on in the show, and Emily's going to be choosing her Desert Island Nolan. So we normally do a segment called Desert Island Films. Emily's going to be choosing her favourite Christopher Nolan movie, a film that she loves so much. I mean, it was just be her and that film on the desert island. I mean, I can't wait to find out what you're going to choose, Emily.
It's like choosing my favourite child if I had children.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it's like choosing my favourite cat, you know?
Yeah, I should say I'm a cat person too as well, and I have cats. I should have said cat.
Oh, nice one. You're already my favourite guest so far. should we move on to some news now? And a lot has come out over the last week. Firstly, the Batman trailer has dropped.
From your secret friend.
Underneath the bridge.
Who?
Sprung a leak, and the animals I've trapped.
Having a clue.
All become my pet.
Let's play a game, just me and you. Any of this mean anything to you?
You're becoming quite a celebrity. Why is he writing to you?
If you are justice, please do not lie. What is the price for your blind eye?
The hell are you supposed to be?
I'm vengeance.
Obviously, a lot of excitement about this. Robert Pattinson taking over the iconic role after Ben Affleck. You had Christian Bale. Obviously, we just spoke about The Dark Knight. Joe, going over to you first. Obviously, they've released some of the trailer. It's kind of more of like a TV spot, really. They are going back to film some of it now because it did get interrupted by the pandemic. What are your initial thoughts on the trailer? Are you liking the really kind of dark, gritty tone that it's going for?
I am absolutely loving the dark, gritty tone that it's going for. I think it was kind of meant to be, because a couple of days before the trailer dropped, I had literally just finished the first season of True Detective, which people have been on to me to watch for like years and years and years. And I'm like, I'll get to it eventually, you know, amongst all the other kind of hundreds of TV shows everyone raves about. And I absolutely adored True Detective. It was one of those shows which I kind of just got up in the finale and I had to stand up. I was so like involved into it and immersed into it and so like stressed out by it. I was on a high after it. And so to like be obsessed with a show which is all about crime and detective work and serial killers, to suddenly see this trailer for the Batman drop, like literally a couple of days later, which has that kind of David Fincher 7 vibe to it, which seems to be focused on that detective element of the Caped Crusader, which is something which has been touched upon before, but not really kind of delved, like been the main focus of. I was like really, really excited and over the moon by it. And I'm a big fan of the Planet of the Apes movies that Matt Reeves directed, big fan of those. So I know the franchise is in capable hands. And I'm just pleased that it looks like they are going in a different direction to the versions that we've seen before. And Batman seems to just be a character which everybody loves, and he's so pliable. You know, you can have him, you know, the Tim Burton films, the Joel Schumacher kind of campy movies. You've got the 60s series. You've got the Nolan movies. You've got the Lego movie. So I think it's going to be really exciting to see something different. And I'm very excited for Robert Pattinson's take on it. I think he's going to kill it. And I love Paul Dano as well. Such good casting. For me, it's got all the makings of being a real success, because it's got the casting, it's got the talented filmmaker, and people are just going wild for it. Absolutely looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely, me too. And it's funny with Robert Pattinson, because when they first announced him, I was a bit skeptical. And I think what we found out, especially with Tenet now, which we can talk about, he's such a versatile actor. And I really kind of, I second guessed him. I just really put him in this box and I thought, he's never going to break out of the Edward Cullen mold, but boy, is he doing it. I think it looks great. Emily, what about you? Obviously, you said about The Dark Knight, and you said obviously how much that meant to you in terms of cinema. Are you a fan of the Batman series, and how do you think this is going to fare compared to the rest?
Yeah, I'm a big Batman fan and I'm absolutely like stoked to see the Batman. I think a bit unlike you, Dan, when Robert Pattinson was cast, I couldn't think of anyone better. I'm secretly a Twihard. So I've been a Robert Pattinson fan since I was like 12. But I think his work in Good Time, The Lighthouse, Velocity of Zed, you know, he's a remarkable actor. And that trailer just really like, didn't take me by surprise. I was expecting it to be great anyways, but it's just so interesting. As you were saying, Joe, it's more of a detective story. Like, it gives me proper like serial killer David Fincher style vibes. And yeah, I'm pretty excited. And it's remarkable that they've only filmed, I think, a third or a quarter of the movie. Yes, and they managed to produce that trailer from that. So I do think some things might change, because obviously as they finish the film, you know, there might be some story changes or character changes. But I do think, since its reaction I've seen online is so positive, it will be very similar to that vibe. But yeah, I'm excited. It is very different. It is a dark take. It looks like a dark take anyways, but a different one to the way that Nolan took it. So I'm intrigued. And I adore Matt Reeves. Planet of the Apes, that trilogy, just it's outstanding. So yeah, I think it's got all the right talent behind it as well to make it something really interesting.
Do you think it will hold its nerve? Because, I mean, you watch that trailer and you think, surely they're going to go down the Joker route and kind of make it R-rated, like, you know, the Americans call it, or like a 15 here, which would, I think, be like the first kind of Batman movie since probably the Tim Burton days, which would have had like a higher rating than a 12A. Do you think the Joker will as kind of encourage the studio to kind of make it that much darker and kind of make it more aimed towards the adult audience?
I think it'll be a bit like the way The Dark Knight was, in terms of it's quite mature and adult, but it manages to be a 12A just because, you know, Batman is, loads of kids love him as well. So I can't really see, and also because it's a massive studio movie, I can't really see Warner Brothers being like, oh no, we want to shut out the kids. But I think it's all, if it gets the balance right, like Nolan did with The Dark Knight, you know, it could be something quite special.
Impossible. A woman leading a man's army. It is
my duty to fight for the kingdom.
The girl who has come to save the dynasty.
You will die pretending to be something you are not. Yet here I stand. I'm Hua Mulan. I will bring honor to us all.
Disney's Mulan, rated PG-13. Streaming September 4th. Exclusively available to Disney Plus subscribers with Premier Access.
Obviously, this is something that's caused a lot of controversy. Very much split, I've seen online with people, whether they're going to actually fork out the money to rent this. But Disney announced a couple of weeks ago now that Mulan was going to skip theatrical release altogether, which obviously is a huge blow to cinemas. Just as they're about to kind of get off the ground and start going again, Disney have announced that it's going to go straight to PVOD on Disney Plus and now on other streaming sites as well for an additional $19.99, and that is on top of your $5.99 subscription charge. In America, I believe it's still kind of $30, just under that. And obviously, I know they reduced the amount a little bit. But Emily, like, how do you feel about this? Because I've been kind of toying in my mind. At first, I was really upset by it because, you know, cinemas are in a bit of a grave position right now. Obviously, we've got Tenet, but not a lot is coming out after this. And I think this would have been the perfect film to get audiences back in the cinema. But saying that, you know, you've got people who are genuinely saying that the situation in America, for example, that's still not great. There are many states in America who are seeing rises in coronavirus cases. But £20, that's a bit steep, don't you think?
I think it's steep. I think, firstly, it's a shame it's not getting a cinema release. I know I wanted to see it on the big screen, especially since it's a bit of a different take to Mulan in the sense that there's no music and it's very much like martial arts vibe. And also, you know, it's predominantly like it's an Asian cast and we don't really get that sort of representation in cinema. So it would be, especially in blockbusters. So it would have been great, especially to, you know, push it to cinemas because of that. But I do understand why they've put it on Disney Plus. And I do understand as well the £20, because if you think about if you're a family of four, that's a £5 each, which is cheaper than a cinema ticket. But for me, like, I live with my boyfriend, that's going to cost us £10 each. And I think it is, like, it is steep, especially when it's on top of the cost of the monthly subscription anyways. But I suppose it's a costly movie and they have to make some returns somehow.
Me and Dan have had this conversation a couple of times prior to the announcement that it was coming to Disney Plus. And I personally was convinced that they were going to hold their nerve and release it Christmas time, at least wait and see what, you know, what happens over the next couple of months. Because I honestly think that if things got better, even in America, if things continue to get better over the next couple of months on the build up to Christmas, Mulan being on, you know, release December, you know, beginning of December, I think families would flock out to go see, especially after everything that's happened so far in 2020, to see a big kind of Disney movie, a family movie released around about Christmas time. I think it would have done ridiculously well at the box office. I think it would have been just been a huge success. So it shocked me that they decided that they were going to put it on to Disney Plus, especially so early. And I think some people have said that in the small print, it says something like, see it before everybody else a couple of months beforehand. So the implication there is that it's going to be available for everybody who has Disney Plus in the next kind of 2 months anyway. So I'm not sure if a lot of people are kind of going to go and bother paying the money, especially if for single people, when they can watch it for free or, you know, and within their standard subscription in 2 months' time. I know you were very, very upset, Dan, weren't you? Because you've been very vocal on social media. I think you've even had a falling out with a good friend of ours because you had such differing views about this. Because I know you're very passionate about this and you think it's going to be devastating for cinemas. And I agree. I think Disney are testing the waters. They are putting this out and they've obviously said, oh, if this works, we'll maybe put Black Widow on there in a couple of months' time. So I'm totally with you, Dan. I think we have to fight and kind of wave the flag to, you know, support cinema and maybe not support this as much. But are you still going to rent it?
Let me have a think about that. No, and bear in mind, this was a month ago now. And I think I am, after watching Tenet and seeing the response to that, I'm less worried now about cinema. I'm still worried, but not as much, because thankfully we have directors like Christopher Nolan who appreciate cinemas and appreciate seeing things on the big screen and don't just cash in like Disney have done. And, you know, I'm with Emily. Why not just release it simultaneously? Why not give consumers the choice? I don't understand that. And I think what I've come to understand now is that they don't want to do that because they know, like Emily, who's, you know, two people who live on their own, single people, will go to the cinema or will go and do 2-for-1 Meerkat movies, which costs like £5 between two people. And Disney have gone, oh no, well, we can't do that because we're going to lose money. Right, let's just not allow any cinemas to show it, which I think is really bad because, like, give people the choice, you know? I mean, I know a lot of films are doing that now, and I've got no issue with that at all. I've got no issue with streaming. There are many, you know, places in the world, namely America, where yes, it's improving, but there are states there that are seeing a spike and are seeing a rise in cases and don't want to go to theatres. That's fine. If you don't want to, that's absolutely fine. But yeah, I'm with Emily on this. I think they should be giving people the choice. I will not be renting it at all. I don't think I'll be watching it, to be honest with you. And my girlfriend is the biggest fan of Mulan. It's her favourite Disney film of all time. So I think she was apprehensive. Yeah. I mean, when she saw there was no Mushu, I think she was just like, nah, not for me. It's going to be interesting to see how it does and, like, whether it paves the way, you know, whether Disney looks at this and thinks, right, Black Widow, let's put that on. Emily, what do you think about Black Widow? Do you think if it does well, they're going to do the same with that? Because I can't imagine watching a Marvel movie at home, can you?
No. I think also Black Widow is Marvel Studios, so they will have a say. The thing that I was just thinking about it now, but it shocks me the most is New Mutants. Out of the two, yes. New Mutants and Mulan, I'm going to go see New Mutants tomorrow at the cinema. I would have put New Mutants on Disney Plus rather than Mulan. I think, especially since Mulan would draw on bigger crowds, and also New Mutants, like, I'm excited to see it, mainly because it's had such a fascinating history, but it's been constantly delayed. They clearly want to get rid of it, hence why they're putting it out in the middle of a pandemic. To shove it on Disney Plus rather than Mulan. So, and again, New Mutants, it's a Marvel movie. Maybe that's why it's getting a cinema release, and that's why that leaves me holding out hope that Black Widow will also get a cinema release. But I just, I don't understand it at all.
You took the words right out of my mouth there with New Mutants as well, because I was going to say, it's just that's the most baffling thing for me as well, is the fact that obviously New Mutants has kind of been stuck in film limbo for the last 3 years or whatever. And you're absolutely right, Emily. Like, this was the perfect time for Disney to go, okay, well, maybe let's stick this film we've had on the shelf for 3 years, which would be probably perfectly fine on a television screen, and see how well that does at a cost, as opposed to put Mulan, which has got, you know, a female director, like you said before, Emily, an all predominantly Asian cast, something that we haven't seen in a long, long time on the big screen. Disney are making some very, very strange choices at the moment. And yeah, I can't wait to see New Mutants. And I think we're going to be reviewing it on the next show, aren't we, Dan? So stay tuned for that one as well. That's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And moving on now to some reviews. And speaking of Disney Plus, they have released a new film on their stream platform for free. Don't worry, guys, it doesn't cost $20. And it's called The One and Only Ivan. It's directed by Thea Sharrock, and it's got a great cast. You've got Angelina Jolie, Bryan Cranston, Sam Rockwell. And it's the story of a gorilla named Ivan who tries to piece together his past with the help of an elephant named Stella, played by Angelina Jolie, as they hatch a plan to escape from captivity. So it's all set inside a zoo, inside of a shopping mall. Yes. Inside of a shopping mall. And you've got Bryan Cranston's character, who's been looking after Ivan for many, many years. He's grown up with him. And basically, Ivan kind of comes to realize that he is trapped in this place. He wants to basically be set free along with a younger elephant who's just joined. And they hatch the plan to do just that. Do we have a clip?
Did you draw these?
No.
Oh.
Ivan drew them.
Did he? You know, actually, these aren't too bad. How about that, huh? A gorilla who draws. Gorilla that can draw. A gorilla who draws.
Now that's something.
Dad.
Oh, boy.
Dad, I told you I have a huge drawing. Look.
The press is going to eat this up. Oh. A gorilla who can actually draw. Now that's like, that's a game changer.
Game changer.
That was a clip there from The One and Only Ivan. Shall I start this one off? Because I feel like I have the most positive thing to say. Or does someone else want to go first?
You go for it, mate. You go for it.
All right. Well, I'll start from the top and then we'll just go all the way down, shall we? Like a roller coaster. So obviously this is on Disney Plus and very topical right now with Mulan conversations. And it was just nice not to pay £20 to see it, obviously. But sometimes that isn't the best thing. And we've seen from Artemis Fowl that Disney Plus has a habit of chucking trashes onto Disney Plus and just saying, oh, there we are, which again, I totally understand why New Mutants is not on there, because looking at the reviews, it's not doing very well. But the cast wise, it looked great. You've got, like I said, Sam Rockwell, Angelina Jolie, Danny DeVito, who I love, and it is another CGI animal film, very reminiscent from like Dumbo, the remake of Dumbo. It reminded me a lot of that. And also there are scenes that, like, set in Africa involving, looks a bit like The Lion King as well. So for me, I just felt like this film was borrowing from a lot of other Disney properties from the get-go. But I've got to say, I think I'm obviously, Emily and I are going to very disagree on this. I was pleasantly surprised. My girlfriend and I sat down in the living room, pulled the curtains over to make it like a little darkened theater, and we had our popcorn, and I was really satisfied with what I got. It's 90 minutes. There's plenty of bits of humor. It had me laughing, chuckling a couple of times. I thought the CGI was quite sweet. I thought the voiceover casting, I mean, you've got some great actors here. Angelina Jolie, she's kind of typecast as the lead in this. She really isn't. She doesn't bring a whole lot. But I think Sam Rockwell is brilliant as Ivan. And I love the partnership he had with Danny DeVito's character and also with Bryan Cranston's character. And I think at points you feel sympathetic towards Bryan Cranston's character. And at other times you don't like him because he is exploiting these animals a little bit. But I think once you get over that, once you stop taking the film as seriously and just treat it as a live-action CGI Disney film, I think you will enjoy it a lot more. I can see a lot of families actually really enjoying this. I thought it was a really delightful time, I've got to say. I didn't really take a whole lot negatively away from the film. I mean, I think in terms of the storyline, it is kind of aimless. It does kind of, there's so many plot points running about, and it does kind of go, well, let's try this. Okay, that didn't work, let's try this. So in terms of the story arc, I wanted a bit more of that. I wanted more of a clearer direction to the film. You know, make it about them trying to escape, and that's all it is in the film, and I'd be happy with that. But there's a lot of, like, Ivan, him painting. Then there's a lot about this young elephant who's taken over the show. There's a lot of Bryan Cranston's backstory. There seems to be so many plot points being, you know, repeated that was the only issue for me. I was a bit like, they should have just kept with one storyline and ran with that. But yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about it. I enjoyed it. Like I said, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I wasn't being charged for it, right? And I think maybe if Mulan hadn't happened, maybe I wouldn't have liked the film as much, but I was grateful for what I was given. What did you guys think? Who wants to go next?
I'll let Emily go next, I think. After that glowing review from you, Dan, I think we'll let Emily go next with her views.
It's just so dull. I don't know what I was expecting, but I'm trying to think of whether I actually remember anything from it, because I watched it quite a bit ago as a press screener, and I actually don't remember much. I just remember thinking, where is this going? As you said, as you kind of mentioned, Dan, it is very directionless, but I just couldn't engage at all with the characters. The Bryan Cranston character confused me. I love Bryan Cranston, but his character confused me, as I wasn't sure if we were meant to like him or hate him, because as you said, he is exploiting these animals, but then he's just such a good guy and he has this very sad backstory. And I think what I needed was him to be like, not like evil caricature, but a bit more nasty and a bit more like, so I could really hate him. So that I wanted these animals to be fully free, but I just couldn't connect with it in any ways. The only thing I really liked was the elephants, because elephants are my favorite animal, but that's not a comment on the film. That's a comment on me. The voice actors were fine, but I just found it really dull and tiresome and stuff I've seen like millions times, I say millions, but you know, many times before. And I'm not really a big fan of circus films. I didn't bother seeing live action Dumbo because it's just not, I'm just not a fan of it. So maybe that's why it's not to my personal taste, but yeah, I just couldn't couldn't engage with it, sadly.
I agree completely. I sat down and watched it on a Sunday evening. And I thought, well, this has got all the makings of that perfect Sunday evening movie right here. I watched it and I thought, I've seen this film 100 times before. Yeah. Disney have been making these movies since, you know, the 80s, 90s. I had my kind of one and only Ivan back in the 90s or whatever with Mighty Joe Young, you know, that was my kind of one and only Ivan. And maybe there'll be a generation of kids who, you know, in 20 years time will look on One and Only Ivan and go, oh, that's a brilliant film. But for me, because I've seen so many of these types of movies, it just kind of went in one ear and out the other. I thought there wasn't anything I hated about it. I sat there and I thought, this is okay, this is fine. And I just kind of sat there and kind of glazed over. But I thought it was fine. I thought Bryan Cranston was okay. You know, this is the guy from, you know, Breaking Bad here we're talking. And, you know, the guy who had a letter from Anthony Hopkins saying Breaking Bad was like the best performance he'd ever seen. And here he's kind of outperformed, I would say, by Sam Rockwell as a CGI ape. And I will say Sam Rockwell, I was quite impressed with. I thought he really kind of did his best to evoke some sort of emotion from Ivan. And I really appreciated that. Of all the voice casts, you've got Danny DeVito being Danny DeVito. And you've kind of got Angelina Jolie being Angelina Jolie as an elephant and stuff. I think of all the cast, I think Sam Rockwell at least tried. And that's because Sam Rockwell, not to, you know, kind of take anything away from the other cast, but Sam Rockwell is an incredibly talented actor. And you can tell he really gave it his all. At the end, when he said, oh, this is a true story, I kind of left thinking, oh, do you know what? I probably would have preferred a documentary about the real life situation. Something like Project Nim, which was released like, well, I can't remember how long ago now, which was a similar kind of thing. And I thought, well, you know, if Disney had maybe made a documentary about the true life story of these characters, I think that would probably have been more enthralling, more engaging than what we got here, which was something which was just kind of middle of the road and very nearly put me to sleep.
Oh, that's a shame. Maybe it's not the one and only Ivan. Maybe he's not. Maybe there would be a part two, I'm guessing, but who knows? But there we are. The one and only Ivan is available on Disney Plus now for free.
This is where our worlds collide.
All I have for you is a word. It'll open the right doors. Some of the wrong ones, too. Tenet.
You're not shooting the bullet.
Use it carefully.
You're catching it.
There are people in the future who need us. Who need Tenet.
Moving on now to kind of the big film of the show that we're going to talk about. Obviously, Christopher Nolan's Tenet has been released August 26th here in the UK. It's been released next week in America, and it could potentially be the film to save cinema. It could be the film to really kind of get audiences back in the cinema, and let's hope so. And obviously, we've got like the number one Nolan expert here, Emily, and we've given her the task now of trying to describe the plot of Tenet for us as best as she can, because I don't think Joe and I could do a much better job. No. So Emily, take it away.
you just had me on to do that, didn't you? You didn't want to review, just someone that please explain the plot.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, we'll keep it simple. So we've got John David Washington as the protagonist, who's the hero of the piece. And you know, he becomes wrapped up in this mission, basically, to stop World War III using time inversion, not time travel. That's quite vital. And I don't think there's much more we can say about going into spoiler territory, unfortunately. But it's I think Empire said it was like Bond on acid, which I think is probably the most apt description of this movie. I loved it, obviously. I don't think it's top tier Nolan, though. It's very baffling. Baffling's the word, I think, for it. I think key to the movie is, as a character says, don't try to understand it, feel it. And I think if you go in with that approach and you don't try to worry about picking up on every single plot point, you will just enjoy the ride because it's so impressive, the spectacular set pieces, the phenomenal action, and like it is genius. And I must say that like after the second viewing, that's when everything really clicked for me and I thought, actually, no, this is a masterpiece. I really enjoyed it the first time, but I did find myself a bit lost at points. But I said I wasn't too bothered, but on a second time, yeah, when everything's slotted in, I could just properly like sit back, relax and enjoy the ride. And yeah, I do think it's masterful storytelling, a bit of a masterpiece, but not as good as his other work, because I think it might be a bit too clever.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. What I really like about Nolan is that, like, why he's my favorite director is wrapped up in all these insanely clever, you know, physics and time travel and all this sort of, oh, time inversion in this case, all this, you know, clever stuff going on. You know, his stories have part, like Interstellar is just a dad who wants to save the world for his kid. That's why he goes to space. Inception, again, a dad just wants to be reunited with his kids. And I think whilst the story in Tenet is quite emotional, you know, the focus is on Elizabeth Debicki and her story arc, and I really emotionally connected with that, I didn't find it had as much heart as maybe I personally like from Nolan. So that's why it's not top tier, but it's definitely one of the best things I've seen in cinemas recently. And well, I say recently, I've not been to cinema in months, but you know, over the past year. Yeah. And I was really impressed by it. And as I said, it is Nolan's take on Bond, but as Empire said, but on acid.
yeah, that brilliantly sums it up, really. And well done for that plot. That plot was spot on. That plot.
I was trying.
Yeah, no, it's such a difficult job. I was going to ask, because I had seen that you'd seen it twice. So you just said, so on the second viewing, then did you pick up on a lot more that you maybe missed on the first viewing? And did that kind of increase your respect of the movie? Did you like give it a higher rating than you would have maybe after the first viewing?
So after the first viewing, I was like really blown away by everything going on, but I was a bit lost, especially within the last act with a few plot points, like not much. And I said, I didn't really mind being a bit confused, but I'm the type of person who likes to, I suppose like Nolan, like I like to solve the puzzle. So in the second viewing, it really helped going in. And I suppose rather than being blown away by the action, I could really then properly focus on the plot. So then a few things slotted into place and then it all made sense. And I do think it's really actually quite coherent after second viewing, obviously, because I've seen a lot of people say that they don't understand it. I do get that. But if that's the case after your first viewing, then definitely recommend a second. So after the first, I would say it was a low five. But now I'm like, no, it's definitely a masterpiece. And one definitely worth seeing in the cinemas if you feel safe to go. Because I've been lucky to see it in IMAX twice now. Didn't mean to. I just bitched my opening day tickets in IMAX and then I got invited to the press screening. And I think it's perhaps like my best IMAX experience I've had. It's so loud, like from the opening scene, it's just incredible. And I love being immersed like that by cinema. And that's, again, why Nolan's one of my favourite filmmakers.
It is very, very loud. And I think we left. And I think Dan, I could see.
I was like, Joe, what's going on?
I could see
me and
Dan watch so many movies together, and I've never seen him kind of wince in pain from sound before, because it was so loud. But did you, I've got a question, because I haven't seen a lot of this. I've seen it a lot in the past with Nolan's movies, especially Dark Knight Rises and the whole Bane gate, the mask and not being able to hear much through the mask. Did you find, Emily, that there was the similar kind of issues here with the sound, seeing it in IMAX, that some of the dialogue was missed? And especially in a film where, you know, you've got so much exposition, so much kind of plot explaining as it's going through. Did you find that you were missing a lot of that because of the sound?
Not really. Maybe once or twice in terms of dialogue, but I didn't really find it to be an issue, especially at the IMAX. And it's funny what you were saying about exposition, because I felt that there is quite a bit of exposition in the first, let's say, like 40 minutes, and then Nolan just gives up on that and just throws you in a deep end, like, right, lads, crack on, you know, you'll be fine. But which is why I actually think I appreciated the movie more, because I didn't want everything explained to me. I quite like puzzles and trying to figure it out. And because I've seen those people say that there's too much exposition or lack of exposition, when I think I actually enjoyed the lack of exposition. But because there's moments where a character would start explaining what was going on and then it just cut away, because as in Nolan was just like, nah, you don't need that information. But in terms of the sound, yeah, once or twice, but not really a huge issue for me, to be honest.
So Dan, so what did you think of it then? Because we talked briefly, well, I say we talked briefly about it afterwards. I think it was, we were just so like jumbled up, our brains were so scrambled after the film. We were just kind of like, oh yeah. So I don't really know fully. I mean, I've seen your rating now. I did have a snoop to see what you gave it, but I don't know what you actually thought of it. So what did you think?
Well, my ears have just come back, so I can hear properly. And yeah, I'm going to give it a 1 star. No, just kidding. yeah, it was. You're right, Joe. And I think, you know, Christopher Nolan's director, where his films are really hard to digest. And I think the best way to describe the film is: I was stunned, I was shaken, I was immersed, and I was frustrated all at the same time. and you definitely walk away with an immediate response to the film. You know. And you're right, the sound design was so loud and booming. And I wasn't complaining so much, but it's never been that loud in Super Screen where we saw it on. Mm. Looking at Christopher Nolan's filmography, there's a distinctive visual style running through it. There's an aesthetic. You know you're watching a Christopher Nolan movie, and that is present in every one of his films, whether it be The Dark Knight, whether it be Inception, whether it be Dunkirk. That is present. It's always in every one of his films, and I respect that for him. In terms of the performances, the cast are great. The practical effects I really appreciated. There's a scene involving a plane that just kind of goes through a building, all done practically. Could not believe my eyes. And in a world where so much is done with CGI, it was really refreshing to see that. And some of the car chase sequences, and like you said, Emily, the set pieces, mind-blowing. Like, honestly, yeah. My jaw was to the floor. It really was. So I think from a visual standpoint, Nolan delivers yet again, I think, even better so than he has in his last couple of films. But for me, it's not his best film, not by a long, long shot. And I think maybe me going to watch Inception didn't help with that. Because like you said, Emily, you hit it on the nail on the head. With every one of his films, and in particular with Inception, you had the visual aesthetic, you had the cinematography, you had, you know, all those technical elements at play. But beneath the style, you had substance. You had, for me, the best thing about Inception, and I picked up on it even more so, was Leonardo DiCaprio and Marion Cotillard and their relationship. And the themes running through the film, which is about grief, it's about holding on to some really toxic memories of somebody and how that can literally kill you. And it was that heart and soul I was really missing in Tenet. And I think maybe that was a purposeful decision Christopher Nolan made. Maybe he wanted to strip back spy thriller. He didn't want those underlying themes kind of distracting us, because like you said, the concept, I mean, it takes 2.5 hours just to kind of explore the concept. And even then I was like, I could have done with an extra hour, because it is such a mind-blowing concept. Thematically, I wanted more of an undertone to it. I wanted more substance. I wanted more character development. I got to say, I think Robert Pattinson's great in it. But again, I wanted a bit more depth with him. Aaron Taylor Johnson just shows up. And he's like, all right, fellas, we're going into war. And I'm just like, what's going on? But like you said, Emily, you raised a really good point. I've only seen it once. And I think it is deserving of a second watch. And I'm sure I'll pick up on so much second time around. But I really, really liked it a lot. And I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking, well, it's not his best, but it's basically saying, oh, the caviar I had last night wasn't as nice as I had tonight, you know? It's not saying much at all. I love Christopher Nolan. I love what this film represents. The fact that Christopher Nolan has stood his guns and said, no, I adore cinema. I adore the theatrical experience. I want audiences to flock to see that. I have so much respect for him, because if it wasn't for him, we would be in a really bad situation right now. So go out and watch it. Whatever you think about it, I know a lot of people love it. I know there are a small minority who really haven't taken to it very well.
Yeah.
But make your own mind up. And like you said, Emily, it's a really kind of visceral, immersive experience. And it definitely leaves you shaken and stunned, like I said. Even if you don't quite understand it or don't quite like some of it, you really walk out going, wow, that was something really special. So yeah, I really liked it. Not his best of his filmography. Maybe, like I said, that has something to do with the fact that I saw Inception again, but definitely recommend it. And yeah, people should definitely go and watch it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how general audiences react and have been reacting to it, because it is very divisive. I think I came out of it because obviously a lot of people were like, do you think it will save cinema? And I really don't know. I think it's the best film to welcome us back to cinema, because it's like being punched in the face by cinema repeatedly throughout. And it really is all about the big screen experience. But I do think it is a bit too complex, you know, for maybe some people. And that's why I can see why it's been getting, you know, such low ratings at some other places. But I really enjoyed it. I'm with you, Dan. It's not my personal favourite by far. And is because it does lack the heart and soul of other Nolan movies like Interstellar and Inception, but I still thought it's a masterpiece. And as I said, like, it's still like a five-star masterpiece. He just keeps producing them, but it is a very different movie to his other work. I'm gonna go see it a third time next week, and then a fourth probably, because I have a problem.
So you're addicted.
Well, I'd rather see something like Tenet, which, you know, has some imperfections and some flaws, than like a really kind of like solid genre movie that I've seen loads of times before. Like, it's just so much more interesting. And I think I'm a big Bond fan as well, so I really like how this is his take on Bond and, you know, and a thriller. And it's just so exciting to watch. And going back to, I suppose, we were talking about the Batman earlier, Robert Pattinson's so good in this film. It made me even more excited to see his Bruce Wayne, because he's his character, who bizarrely is just called Neil, which has now become an internet meme, because he's like sexy, mysterious, but he's just called Neil with like no middle name or surname or anything. Like, he's like a standout for me, as is John David Washington and Elizabeth Debicki. But I don't know, it just made me more excited to see his Batman as well.
Yeah, my dad's gonna love that. His name's Neil. He's like, oh, I'm sexy now. Wow.
Yeah, one of my friends called Neil went to see it, and he said his favorite thing was that he's finally got a sexy Neil in cinema. Yeah, and it's Robert Pattinson. So
I think we all need sexy versions of ourselves in cinema with our names. Definitely, I don't think I've ever seen a sexy Joe in cinema for sure.
I would say Joe from that Netflix series, You.
That's the guy. But then I think he's like a crazy,
he's also a serial killer, so
so I try not to
can't always get him
kind of put myself in with him. But it's really good. I think this conversation is what's really lovely, is that the one thing I've never kind of, which I've taken kind of big issue with people in the conversation with Nolan in the past, are people who say that he's a cold filmmaker, you know, his films don't have heart. So it's really nice that you, Dan, because, you know, we haven't really talked a lot about Nolan, me and you personally, Dan, in the past. It's nice that you picked up on that. And obviously, Emily, you're a big fan, so you understand that obviously that he does have the heart in all of his movies. And I've got to say, Dan, I disagree with you slightly with Tenet, in the sense that I did think that it had an under kind of running theme, and that was the kind of relationship between, you know, the mother, again, like a parental child relationship with Elizabeth Debicki and her child. Leaving the film, and since leaving it and kind of thinking about it, that plot thread, that whole kind of relationship, the fact that this character just, you know, will kind of risk her life, she will do anything she can to kind of make her child safe, and to have that relationship that she's kind of been forced to lose with her child, that is kind of been what stuck with me the most out of all of it, to be honest. And I think that's why I was kind of, all through the film, I was kind of going, this is all right. And I was like, this is amazing. And I was like, nah, it's back to all right again. And this is amazing. Because I think for Christopher, the whole time invasion thing, I think it's a neat concept. It's really cool. But then as the film kind of progressed and you started to get to know the characters more, I think I kind of was more interested in this relationship between mother and son than I was the kind of, oh, look, this is an explosion going backwards, or this is a car going backwards. I think I was more enthralled in the actual storyline than I was the actual technical kind of feats of it. And that's not to take away from the technical feats, because they are incredible. And as you said, Emily, the set pieces are terrific, and more so the fact that they are all practical. I have taken a few days, and it's the first film that I can remember seeing in a long, long time. Usually when I go to the cinema, I come straight out and I put my rate in on the phone. And this is the first film in years, I think, where I kind of was like, I'm not going to rush to any conclusions, I'm not going to jump to any conclusions, and I sit on it for a while, I'm going to think about it. And my levels of enthusiasm for it definitely did grow by letting it kind of sink in and thinking about the different aspects that I really liked about it, about that relationship, about the performances, which I think are really, really strong. I mean, John David Washington, the second he came on screen, I mean, I loved Black Klansman anyway from a couple of years ago, the second he came on screen, that swagger, that charisma that this guy has, he's gonna like have a really good career ahead of him because he's just so charismatic. You can tell, you know, obviously he was born to be a star. I loved his performance. I loved the kind of look of it. I loved the suits. I loved the style of it. I loved Robert Pattinson's performance as well. I loved the relationship between him and John David Washington, especially towards the end. But it did, it just frustrated me. And I'm okay for going to a film and being challenged. And I love films like that usually, but it did frustrate me a lot. And throughout the film, I was just kind of flipping back and forth between whether or not I loved it or hated it. And I've kind of fallen on the side of loving it just because I think when it's important to praise this film and to encourage people to go out and watch it for not only because it's a terrific piece of filmmaking, but because I think cinemas are kind of relying heavily on that. And I think all production companies are kind of all eyes on Tenet at the moment and all eyes on Nolan. He is a filmmaker who will push the boat out and he will try and do something different. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And you know what? That's absolutely fine. I think it isn't completely successful. It feels like an experiment which hasn't quite worked as well as maybe I would have liked. But at the same time, I think when you kind of add up all the different parts of it all together, I think it is, you know, a really visceral movie, which everybody should definitely go out and see. Definitely not Nolan's best. And I think people will be talking about this for years to come. But that's okay, you know, it's created a discourse, it's created a conversation, it's created a debate, and that in itself is great for films to do. And I can't remember a film in a long time which has caused this sort of debate as well. So yeah, let it sink in, I think. And I think I will go out and watch it again for sure. And then we'll see, you know, where we sit from there, I think.
And a big shout out to Kenneth Branagh, who's horrifyingly good in this. Like every
so scary.
Every time he shouted, a little bit of pee came out. I was just like, what's going on?
One of my favourite shots is, it's just a real close-up in Kenneth Branagh's face and he's like yelling at someone and his eyes are just like black with evil. And I've never seen Kenneth Branagh like that and now I'm absolutely terrified of him.
Yeah, I mean, I bet he was like that after watching Artemis Fowl, I mean.
yeah, that's why he's so bad.
Yeah, I do think, I agree with Joe, a lot has to be said for Elizabeth Debicki's fantastic performance as Kat. Like, she really picked up on how that character and that character's arc is the heart of the story. And as Eva doesn't have as much heart as his other movies, like, I still was, like, crying at the end and shaking. Yeah. And, like, she is just fantastic. And, you know, she's great in Widows as well, which is a film, like, I think very, you know, very little seen. And she's just phenomenal. And also, she gets to be tall. They put 6'3", I think she is, in high heels throughout, and she looks great.
Yeah, the scene where she's waiting for her son outside the school, and she's like almost as tall as the gate. She's like, yeah. I was like, yes, but yeah,
Elizabeth Debicki in IMAX as well.
Yes, great. yeah, exactly.
Well, there we are. And yeah, Tenet is in cinemas now, only in cinemas. So please make sure to, like Joe said, go out, encourage this filmmaking and just make sure that cinema multiplexes stay open for a long, long time. Moving on to the last segment of the show. This is always a fun one we like to do with our co-hosts and our guests that we have on the show. It's normally called Desert Island Films, and we have a little kind of tropical music in the background right now. But we're going to change it for you, Emily, because you're such a special guest. We're going to call it Desert Island Nolan. So imagine, Emily, there's no pandemic. You're on your flight now. You're going to Barbados. All of a sudden, the airplane crashes on a desert island, and you can choose only one Christopher Nolan movie to take with you. I know, obviously, you've had a little think about it, but have you come to any decisions of what you're going to choose?
I have. To be honest, you didn't have to change it anyways, because even if it wasn't Nolan, my answer would be the same.
Oh, fair.
So, which is, you know, so I think, as I said, it's very hard because I'm very attached to him. And I would choose The Dark Knight because that is, I'm very like attached to that movie and it's my personal favourite movie of all time. I think partly because it introduced me to cinema, but I am going to choose Inception, which I think is not only his best work, but I think his most like complete and enjoyable work, not only because it's just so entertaining, it's just got such heart and emotion, and but it's one of those where I think if you're on a desert island, you only got one film, you're gonna be watching it endlessly. And even with Inception, like I've seen it countless times, like so many times. I went to go see it in the cinema, a bit like you, Dan, you know, for its 10th anniversary re-release, and I picked up on more then. Like, I feel like with every single watch, I'm unpeeling layers. And I just think it's, yeah, the perfect movie, therefore, to watch on a desert island. And also Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, be good to be stuck with him on a desert island. So, I think it's his best work because it's just that balance of, it's got impressive visuals, stunning special effects, you know, it's great performances, and it's such a maze. But I said, at the heart of that maze is this emotional story of Cobb, you know, his dad is trying to get back home. And I just think I really connect with, and yeah, it's just a masterpiece. It's fantastic.
Mm. I hope Tom's not listening because he's going to be jealous of you and Leo on the beach.
But that soundtrack as well. I mean,
yeah,
because me and Dan were talking about it before we went into Tenet, and seeing it on the super screen again with that soundtrack, that final kind of 20 minutes, Hans Zimmer's music for Inception is iconic in of itself. Mm. To be honest, I think you could, you know, somebody who's not even a film fan could probably pick that out, that music is from Inception. So that wouldn't be too bad to listen to either.
No.
When you're stuck on a desert island, for sure.
Yeah, Hans Zimmer's Time, I think, is perhaps my favourite piece of music from cinema. And that's why I use it to open every single episode of Knowing Me, Knowing You. Because it just is, it's just brilliant. Yeah, I couldn't think of a better movie to take to desert island. As a just for the sheer enjoyment factor, but also the fact that it stands up, you know, for repeated viewings as well.
Yeah, it's a brilliant score. And thank you very much. And that's all we've got time for on today's show. It has flown by. But a big thank you to our guest and co-host this week, Emily Murray. Emily, would you like to promote your podcast for everybody, or let us know where we can find you online?
Yeah, so I run Nolan Me, Nolan You, which is for any Nolan fans out there. I suppose hopefully you'd enjoy listening to it. So that's on Twitter at Nolan Me, Nolan You. But also you can find me at Emily V. Murray on Twitter, and I promote all my work. I pop up in like Yahoo and the BBC and Film Stories and places, sometimes talking about Nolan, but sometimes talking about other stuff. I recently just ranked all of his films for Yahoo. So if you want to see where Tenet places in that, I'd recommend checking that out. But yeah, my Twitter is basically just me talking about Chris Nolan, mostly Robert Pattinson as well. And yeah, that's where I share all my work.
Well, definitely go out and listen to it. It's a great podcast. And again, thank you so much for coming on, Emily. It's great to have you here. Sure. And like I said, that's all we've got time for on today's show. Please make sure to follow us on Facebook, and we're under Dan and Joe Film Show. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at DJ Film Show. And you can listen to all our old episodes as well on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes and Apple Music too. We'll be back next week, and we look forward to seeing you then. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.